ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
हरे कृष्ण. Welcome to ISKCON of Silicon Valley. And it's a delight to see all of you. It really is. Thank you for making your way through the darkness and the rain to come here to hear and chant. It's a holy place in the middle of Silicon Valley, which is a place where a lot of great endeavor takes place to try to find happiness. There's a lot of investment being made in time, resources, intelligence to create things that will make our lives better. But the only ultimate solution to life comes from the spiritual platform. That's not such a complicated matter also. Coding is a little complicated. Testing after the coding is very complicated. I've seen it recently. You have to go through and look and see where all the broken links are. If something's one micron off, the memory will leak out and you'll have problems. And these are ongoing problems. But Krishna consciousness is really simple. Whether one has a high IQ or a low IQ, if one has spiritual intelligence enough to know that the ultimate purpose of life is to dedicate whatever resources one has to the supremely intelligent being who's created everything, then one's actually in the right track. And that's not so hard, especially through the process of bhakti, because singing songs about Krishna is natural, simple, natural, and joyful. And so is repeating Krishna's names. This is a much overlooked solution to life's problems. In fact, throughout Silicon Valley, practically nobody knows this except for you. And that is that if you take time every day to repeat, for instance, the Maha Mantra, which is the most recommended of mantras in this age, then you'll be able to approach whatever situations you have in your life from point of view of spiritual solutions. And you can't get it by using your materially trained intelligence to fix problems. It'll always come apart again. But through the spiritual platform, we can solve problems. So I'm saying all this in the way of appreciating all of you for coming here to sit and listen, be with the deities, hear from Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, because this really is the solution for life's problems. And those who realize this more and more spend more and more time doing it. Shraddha Shabde Vishras Kahi Suridanashtroy Krishna Kole Bhakti Sarva Karma Krita Hoy. A person who has increasing faith has the sense that the more that I engage in bhakti, especially Shravanam Kirtanam, the more I solve the problems of life and I do what's necessary to do. In fact, the Bhagavatam says, give statements like Devarshi Bhutat Nrinam Pitrinam Nakinkaro Nayam Rinicha Rajan Sarvat Marayasharanam Sharanyam Gatomukundam Prihritakartam. What does that mean? What does Deva mean? What about Rishi? Bhutapta. Living entities. How about Nrinam? Humans? Nri means human. How about Pitri? Forefathers? So this verse is naming different people that we're obligated to, because we're not born or supported in isolation. Thank you.
Goodness gracious.
But we're dependent on a multitude of living entities who help us. How do the devas help us? They supply the rain. That's right. The air and rain. Tevarshi. And the rishis. How do the rishis help us? Yeah, they pass down this knowledge. It has to be, knowledge has to be organized, and it also has to be passed down. I mean, that's why all of you, you're doing this work of passing down knowledge. You will be you will be remembered for generations, maybe for thousands of years, for the work that you're doing. It may seem insignificant now, or somewhat significant, but it's highly significant. Even those who take the time to organize knowledge, put it together in codes and books like Vyasadeva, editing, Vyasa means editor, edits the pertinent parts of the Vedas, makes them available to the world in thoughtful ways. We worship them. Narayanam Namaskritya, Naram Chaiva Narottama, right? We offer our prayers to them. And to Narada Muni, who's given us the Pancharatras, from the Narada Pancharatras, so that we have an abbreviated system from the Vedic system. We need an abbreviated system in this age. So he's given us that. He's worshipped everywhere throughout the three worlds. And all of you, you're participating in that by disseminating knowledge to the world. It's the most important of activities. It's generational work, and it's something that people are indebted to. When we receive those kinds of things, we're debtors to Narada Muni. We may not remember it, but we should. We should remember. So the verse says, since we're born into a world where we're rini, we're debtors to many, many people, the only way to repay that debt is to surrender to the process and take advantage of what Govinda is giving us, Mukunda, the liberator, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the more we're on that side, the more we use our energies to hear and chant about Krishna and surrender to Krishna through the process of bhakti, then that's how we liquefy our debt, liquidate our debt. So, wow, look, we got a new modern clock up there. Goodness gracious, that's a shock. That's definitely a fashion statement there. You should have put an eye watch up there. See if you can get a wall size eye watch, Apple Watch.
It'll only be $40,000
for the new wall eye watch, Apple Watch XR for the wall. This is a song about Narada Muni, and he plays a veena. Narada Muni is a transcendental personality. He in his previous life, actually go back two lives, he was a demigod, and he was traveling, and he was a really good bhajaneer. He used to sing everywhere, he was very attractive. And he didn't make too much discrimination about what he sang. He'd sing songs to the demigods, and he'd also, you know, hang out with all kinds of beautiful women. He was sort of like really enjoying his life of being a great singer. So you have to be careful also. The devotional arts of what our motivation is. He ended up in an assembly of great Vaishnavas and he started singing songs to the demigods. Actually, kirtan is meant for Krishna, to glorify Krishna. And the Vaishnavas became disturbed with him for his attitude and also for his miscalculation of singing songs to worship the demigods rather than Krishna. So they cursed him to become a Shudra in his next life. So he was born in this family, single family, only with mother and no father, and in a very kind of simple situation. But he got the benediction. That is, some sages came there for the Chaturmasya, and they were doing their bhajan. This is such a beneficial situation. If somebody who's doing bhajan at a very high level comes to stay with you, then your whole house changes, your life changes, your kids change, everything changes. Satyadev Prabhu was telling how Parfat Maharaj came. I think he's an Indian citizen now, but a long time ago, he came to the Bay Area to get a 10-year visa to continue his stay in Vrindavan, and he moved into their house. The kids were still living there at the time. He took his Govardhan Shila, and he put it on the top of the television. That's where he put him to worship the Govardhan Shila. That was the end of the television coming on for weeks. And then... And then they just noticed that, you know, no matter what time of the day or night they'd wake up, he'd be sitting there chanting. He'd just sit on his bed and chant. And every day he, you know, for his meal he'd have a yam. He'd eat one yam or two yams a day. That was it. Simple. And get a little exercise, he'd walk up and down their street in the suburbs of Half Moon Bay or wherever it's called where they live. And he looked kind of like, you know, the way he has his long beard and he puts the, you know, bib over his head. And he looks like kind of like a Hasidic Jew or something like that walking up in there. But people would be like, who is that? The whole neighborhood was affected. But definitely the kids, you know, they saw, wow, this person's serious. And the rest of the house was affected. So Narada Muni was living sort of a ordinary life, nothing extraordinary, exceptional at all, except that they were poor, didn't have a father in the house. And then these sages moved in. Narada Muni's mother gave him a space to stay there to do their bhajan for Chaturmasya. And their whole lives changed. Narada Muni, he was just a child at the time, and he started appreciating the vibration and spending time with them, listening to their chanting and hearing their talks about the Bhagavatam. Then he'd serve them, help his mother serve them. And then once, you know, he asked, can I take your remnants? And they granted him that. And then he noticed that he was changing, and his whole life changed. He became spiritually surcharged. And the sages left after the 4 months of the rainy season. And soon afterwards, his mother went out to milk a cow, and she got bit by a snake and died. So the whole world was vacant as far as his material life goes. But he was feeling this sense of upliftment. So he started wandering. He just took off. He left his town, had no connections anyway. As he wandered through the countryside, he saw mines, he saw metropolises, he saw small towns, little hamlets, he saw forests. And Prabhupada describes there how important it was for him to observe the energies of the Lord, and that those who are advancing spiritually should notice how we're actually walking on the body of the Lord. This is brought up by Shukadeva Goswami in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where he's describing to Parikshit Maharaj that this whole world is the body of God. A little ant crawling on my arm recently, and I was just thinking that he knows more about my arm than I do, and that I'm walking around on this thing, and he doesn't know what it is, actually. He doesn't know that I live there in this body. And you know, there's who knows what it's like walking in this arm, what he sees with tiny little eyes, but it's probably some wild forest or something like that. I walk around, and I don't know where I came from or where I'm going, but actually, according to Shukadeva Goswami, I'm walking on the body of the Lord. Unknowingly, this Narada began to see as he wandered, become more aware of the fact also, when you go out and depend on Krishna more, that he's actually sustaining our lives, fulfilling all our desires.
Which verse?
Fulfilling all the desires of living in his, let's hear it.
Sapariyagachukarmakayamavranam Ashnaviram shuddhama papavidam Kavirmanishi paribhu swayambhur Yatatat yadurvatam vyatadach chashvatibhya samambhyaha.
The essence?
That the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been fulfilling everyone's desires since time immemorial.
Yeah, Krishna's there fulfilling everyone's desire. And for someone to have that realization is very profound. See that Krishna is actually sustaining me, nobody else. This is one of the aspects of surrender to Krishna, is to abide in this realization that I'm being maintained by Krishna and he's actually protecting me, nobody else. There are other faces, but they're masks. they're only masks, and Krishna's behind those masks. For instance, a mother or father, we have so much reverence, respect, because they represent Krishna, but ultimately they're only invested with power that comes from Krishna to take care of us in various ways. A mother nurses the baby, for instance. Where does the milk come from? It's arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mother's not independent in doing that. So Narada Muni then sat in a forest and meditated, and he actually had a direct experience of Krishna. And then he lost it, meaning lost the vision and the connection. And he became anxiety-ridden because it had been so profound, and now he was back in his senses, back in the world. And then Krishna spoke to him in an unembodied voice and said that, "You're not perfect yet. You're still attached to the mode of goodness." And said to, "You know, you live this life, dedicate it to me, and I'll make all arrangements." And Krishna did. When he left this world at the end of his life, Narada Muni, then he received a transcendental body through which he travels everywhere to teach Krishna consciousness. We see him showing up in many instances in the Bhagavatam, the Ramayana, where he comes and intervenes in people's lives. And he's free. You can see the life of a liberated devotee. He's free to go anywhere to teach Krishna consciousness to others, to expand the Lord's glories. And he carries this Veena, you see in the picture. The Veena itself is a person, and it makes a transcendental sound vibration that carries him everywhere. So actually we're carried by mantra. Whatever mantras we use are what move us around in life. You say thank you very much, yes please, those are mantras. They help you move in various social circumstances. They're the mantras you have to learn in order to build things in your life. Get a house, you have to say certain mantras. You have to go down to the credit department and say, "Yes, I will pay you back." That's an important mantra. And there are many mantras. The world runs by mantra. But the ultimate mantra is the Hare Krishna mantra. It's non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if one repeats this mantra, then it can carry us to the spiritual world, which is unlimited. And not only that, one can experience unlimited happiness through this mantra. Other mantras are, especially the material mantras, they bring us only limited happiness. It's temporary. And therefore it's not happiness at all. So this is one of our the great saints that of our line, authorities, that teach us Krishna consciousness. And this is a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur about Narada Muni. So the translation to the song goes like this. When the great soul Narada Muni plays his stringed veena, the holy name of Radhika Ramana descends and immediately appears amidst the kirtan of the Lord's devotees. Like a monsoon cloud, the holy name showers pure nectar into their ears. All the devotees due to great ecstasy enthusiastically dance to their heart's content. All the inhabitants of the universe become maddened upon entering this intoxicating shower of divine sweetness. Some people cry, some dance, and others become fully intoxicated within their minds. The five-headed Lord Shiva embraces Narada Muni, repeatedly makes loud screams. The five-faced Lord Shiva embraces Narada Muni, repeatedly makes loud screams of ecstatic joy, while Lord Brahma dances very ecstatically and exclaims, "All of you chant Hari Bol, Hari Bol. All of you chant Hari Bol, Hari Bol." Don't be shy now. Say Hari Bol, Hari Bol. In supreme happiness, the thousand-faced Ananta Sheshab sings and calls out Hari Hari. By the influence of the transcendental vibration of that name, the whole universe becomes ecstatically maddened, and everyone tastes and relishes the mellows of the holy name. The holy name of Krishna has fulfilled all my desires by thus manifesting on everyone's tongue. Bhakti Vinod, the humble servant of the Lord, therefore prays at the feet of Sri Rupa Goswami that the chanting of Harinam may always continue in this way. Narada Muni
bhajavina radhika namana.
Do you like that song? It'll empower you. That song will empower you. You'll see. The more you sing that song, it's a transcendental song. It connects you to the spiritual world and to Narada Muni and to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And you'll begin to live in the spiritual world just by singing that song. That's the power of the transcendental sound vibration. You move into the material world, literally, from the sound itself. So this is a principle that Narada Muni himself brings up in the Bhagavatam. In the fifth chapter of the first canto, he says, Iti murtyabhidhanina mantra murtim amurtikam yajate yagya purusham sasam yag darshana puman. Said the full darshan of the Lord is achieved through the mantra. Iti murtyabhidhanina mantra murtim amurtikam. He says, what normally is very difficult to do, and that is to see the Lord. People say this all the time, can you show me God? My answer is really yes, but you have to know how to see him. You have to see him in sound. So, iti murti abhidhanina mantra murtim amurtikam. Amurtikam means without difficulty, that you see the murti. Murti amurtikam. So, you see the form of the Lord, amurtikam, because the word means two things. Murti means form, and it also means difficulty, according to the Amarakosh Sanskrit dictionary. And so here in the sentence it means that you'll be able to see the murti, amurtikam, without difficulty. How? Through the mantra. So you can actually transport yourself. When I was a kid, my parents took me to a lot of plays and movies and things like that. And I saw one film called, I think it was Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves. It wasn't a Disney or a thing like that. It was black and white. I think it had subtitles. It was probably in Arabic or Farsi or something. And I just remember flying carpets. It became my thing. You know, we had carpets in and I'd sit on them, let's go, come on. How do you do this? How do you work these things? And actually, the mantra is that flying carpet. You can get on that mantra, you can transport yourself directly to the spiritual world or anywhere else because Krishna fulfills all desires and he's directly there within the mantra. And you can have direct experience of Krishna, see him, talk to him, offer him things, pour out your heart to him through the mantra. So this is Narada Muni's great teaching to us early in the chapter, earlier in the chapter that I just quoted from, that verses, three verses from the end of the chapter. But earlier, Narada Muni talks about how we can use our work also. Whatever work we're doing now, he doesn't offer anything impractical. He says, you're working now. So he said, use a thorn to take out a thorn. If you get a thorn stuck in your arm, you don't have any other tool, just take another thorn and you take out the thorn that got stuck. So similarly, we're stuck in work. It means karma. We're forced to work because we owe a debt. And material nature knows how much it is. We may not know, but when we're born, there's a heavy debt laying over our head. And that's why everyone's telling us, look, little Jeeva, you got to get going. Don't sit around, you know. Go to school, get a job. You got to move because you owe. So off to work you go. And little Jeeva doesn't know that, but when he figures it out that he's caught up in this cycle of work, karma, debt, paying it off, then he can use the same work that he's doing now by dedicating it to Krishna, and it removes that thorn of material existence. I mean, we're humans, we're lucky because we're right in the middle of the universe. We have enough experience of suffering here so that we're motivated, aren't we? Say yes.
Yes.
But say yes more enthusiastically.
Yes.
And we're also not so oppressed, especially here in California, by our environment, that you know, it curtails our ability to perform service. I mean, it's pretty close if you're on an H-1 visa or something like that. There's a lot of oppression here. So, you know, motivation is there, but it's not so bad that we can't adjust our lives in such a way that we can offer what we're doing to Krishna. So we're in a good situation, and we can use the basic principles that Narada Muni is teaching us in order to come to the perfection stage of life. He's our friend. Narada Muni is our friend. He's extending himself to us through his teachings, through visiting personally in various ways. In fact, Prabhupada used to say that he'd come to the kirtans. Some of those kirtans were so ecstatic, and you did not see Narada Muni. He was there. So now, I'd like to visit another transcendental personality, if we can, from the Bhagavatam, and that's Prahlad Maharaj. So without coming to the position of Prahlad Maharaj, then we have little chance of perfecting our chanting. So Prahlad Maharaj shows us the qualities that are necessary in order to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's no doubt in anybody's mind, anywhere in the universe, because everyone saw it, that the Lord was pleased with Prahlad Maharaj, and that's why Nrisingadeva appeared. Actually, Prahlad Maharaj is Ishtadeva. The deity that he worships in his heart is Govinda, Krishna. But it just so happened that Govinda got really mad when he saw how Prahlad was being treated by his father. And that's why he assumed the form of Lord Nrisingadeva. In fact, it was so astonishing, this form of Nrisingadeva, that even Lakshmi Devi, who's his husband, didn't recognize her husband. It's like, I'm not sure. But Prahlad knew. And that's because Nrisingadeva came for him. He was attracted by his qualities. It goes to show that what really attracts Krishna is the simple qualities of bhakti. And I'm going to read you some of the qualities of Prahlad Maharaj. And just by hearing about them, you're going to feel enlivened, because practically speaking, you'll notice this. When you read the Shastra, you imbibe the qualities of the Shastra. You know what the word imbibe means? That's right. It means to drink. It comes from a Latin word, which means to drink something. What? Beber. Beber. That's right. Beber means to drink. So it's cognate with that word from Latin. Beber. Beer. Maybe. Check it out. See if it has any connection. And so when you hear about the qualities of a pure devotee and the qualities also that Krishna mentions, you have this experience. You'll see, you read in the 16th chapter of the Gita when Krishna mentions the divine qualities. When you read them, your endorphins will actually start to flow in your system, and you'll feel suddenly fortified and empowered just by hearing the qualities of the divine devotees. And similarly, when you hear Prahlad's qualities, you'll feel a similar way. And it'll give your mind an objective in life. So Krishna says in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that there are certain qualities that are meant to open us to the secrets of the universe. And they start off amazingly with humility. Who would have known that humility was the secret to life? It's a secret to everything. In fact, I have proof that it's a secret to management, because I know one of the most learned management experts in the world. His name is Rupanuga Prabhu. He lives in Irvine, and near Laguna Beach, California. He has a PhD in management. Teaches at Chapman University. It's a high, top-flight university there. And the first time I met him, he picked me up at the airport. We got in the car. I said, okay, Rupanuga Prabhu, you teach me management. He said, you already know. Prabhupada already taught you. And I said, come on, don't cheat me. Tell me. He said, Trinada Pisumi Chena. It's about humility. And every once in a while, I can draw out of him some lessons about management, but he always comes back to this point, that humility is the foundational point. In fact, Krishna mentions this as the quality through which the mysteries of the universe are available to us, humility, and then pridelessness, and then nonviolence, and he goes on from there. So, just the other day, if I'm not remembering incorrectly, I think it was a Sunday, we were talking about a few points from the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And does anybody remember any of the five main points that I made before I go into? One was to be patient. What was the context? And use the mics, by the way. Go ahead and say it again.
Fifth of those was be patient.
Yes.
I can recall that.
Do you remember the context, how we brought it up?
You mentioned that Krishna comes at the right time. He's expert, he knows when exactly to come, appear in our lives.
Okay. So the chapter is chapter 4, and it was verses 25 and 26. 4, 7, 4, 25, 26. And in this verse, the demigods are praying to the Lord, and they say, the voice of the Lord, oh, this is the Lord speaking back to the demigods. They approached him. He said, the voice of the Lord vibrated as follows. O best of learned persons, do not fear. I wish all good fortune to you. Become my devotees by hearing and chanting about me and offering me prayers. For these are certainly meant to award benedictions to all living entities. I know all about the activities of Hiranyakashipu and shall surely stop them very soon. Please wait patiently until that time. Another thing I note in this translation is that by offering prayers, the living entities get benediction. Where else in the Bhagavatam are you aware of a very common statement where it's mentioned that by hearing the Bhagavatam, speaking the Bhagavatam, you get benedictions? The hint is that it's the most common verse. We say it all the time. Okay, go ahead. Take the mic. Belt it out.
Srinvatam Swakatha Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hidvantastuya Bhadrani Vidhanu Tesuhatsatam.
Well done.
Thank you.
Good to have such knowledge available. Now explain to us why you chose that verse.
So it talks about different punya, like when we materialistic people, they talks about punya and that, okay, you do this, you get this. But here the Bhagavatam is talking.
We talk about it in Intel?
Well, they have different punya, like, okay, you do this, then you'll get stocks, or you'll get promotion, appraisal. But that's also one thing that we ask from the demigods and everyone. But here is Srinivatam sort of punya, the greatest pious activity happens just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah, this is something to remember. That, well, let's just put it to you this way. Have you ever felt oppressed by the nature of the material world? Do you like this darkness, by the way, this time of year?
No.
Do you enjoy it?
No.
Do you find it oppressive? I do too. There are other things that are oppressive about the material nature. Without getting too depressed about it, do you want to name a couple? Oh, yes, please. Depression for 500, please. That's a pretty... she's enthusiastic for this one. This is cathartic. Let's talk about it.
This morning I was driving to work and I was just coming out to merge in the freeway, and there were six lanes and I saw the truck going, and I don't know which car hit which car, but all I see is spinning the cars and hitting few other cars, and the four lines of the cars get hidden, and one of the cars just went up on the ramp, and I was just thinking, Krishna, this is, you know, I don't know, these people had nothing to do, anything to do with it, and just got caught up into it. It doesn't take much, you know, and you don't know where it comes from. So
just minding your own business, and padam padam yad vipadam. Some misstep is there, and an anvil falls on your head, piano comes out of the window, falls on your head. Can happen any time. I was waiting at the airport. It was a very crowded day. I was for some time doing book distribution at LAX, and we used to go there every day. And one day it was a long traffic jam to get in, which is uncharacteristic. It took an hour just to get close to the airport so we could park there. And found out the next day that somebody had been killed there. They had a brand new Volvo, which is the safest car you can get. And they were doing construction, and something fell from the second level through the roof of the Volvo, the one part of the Volvo that's not protected, especially from anvils. And it came through the roof, and it killed the driver. And we're just realizing that that person was on their way somewhere, and something happened. So missteps for 500 goes to Hansapriya. You feel like Mimi anymore? I mean, there's ways in which, yes, Shraddha's up for it.
I don't know, but it's directly.
I don't know why, but this feels great. I mean, okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Not directly related, but there's a side connection. The last verse of Guru Ashtakam where it says, Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, Yasya prasadan nagati kutopi, dhyayam stumam tasya yashasti sandhyam vande guru shi charnarindam. So it's talking about that you should be praying 3 times a day and then you get his benedictions.
Yes, talking about punya and staying in touch and things like that. This is really the devotional way of life. Is I like the way you're saying, staying in touch 3 times a day. You know, stopping to do your Gayatri mantra 3 times a day, in which you're saying these prayers, it brings the mind back into the flow of the spiritual energy. Because normally, when we're trying to figure out how to navigate through the freeway, down the freeway, all the problems we're dealing with at work, anything? Anyone? Problems at work? How many approximately? Mom Smart, how many if you're going to count? Do you have to deal with? Shruti Malika, how many you got? 5?
Five,
5, 10? Maybe more?
Depends upon the day.
Yeah. We have a lot of things we're dealing with, so it helps. The only thing that helps, in fact, is to take shelter of the spiritual energy. So coming back to that. So there are many difficult situations in the material world. Don't feel bad if you find yourself in the middle of them, because we are. We're basically in the middle of an ocean. And there are going to be trials, tribulations, and we're basically swimming to stay alive here. And same for everybody. Don't think other people aren't in the same situation as you are. They are. The only difference is that we have information here about how to deal with those situations. And that is to read the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is guaranteed. And in fact, I promise you that if you take time to read Bhagavatam diligently every day, especially in a regulated way, pick a number of pages that you don't go below and hear it every day, that your problems will be mollified, that they will be easier to deal with. And not only that, as we're hearing here, you'll develop this asset. It's a punya. It's a real thing. It's actually the real thing. It's a spiritual credit that you get from hearing the Bhagavatam. If you can spare some time to hear like a whole pastime, like the pastime of Prithu Maharaj, it's pretty lengthy, but when you get to the end of that section, the Bhagavatam will start pouring upon your head benedictions. Don't you like to get benedictions?
Yes.
And if you get them from someone you know where it's going to be effective, then you're like, wow, that's pretty good. So the Bhagavatam does that. You come to the end of Prithu Maharaj and benedictions start pouring out. Mukharvin, could you find a few of them? We'll look them up and tell you what you win for reading them. Tell them what they've won, Mukharvinda. So, yes. Yes, please. You know, Prabhupada writes in one of his books, it's one of the small books, and he says that one of the ways of praying is to admit to Krishna the way you're being tossed in the material ocean. Open your heart to him and tell him, you know, he'll understand and he'll appreciate. He's not the one that's, he won't turn a deaf ear to you. Yes.
So one of the benedictions I remember that by reading Prithu Maharaj, if a king recites this 3 times, before going on a war, he will win the war.
He'll win the war.
Yes.
That's very compelling. Any person who describes the great characteristics of King Prithu with faith and determination, whether he reads or hears of them himself or helps others to hear of them, is certainly to attain the very planet which Maharaj Prithu attained. In other words, such a person also returns home to the Vaikuntha planets, back to Godhead. What do you think? On a scale of 1 to 10, how a 10 being the best, how good do you think that is? Are you 10s, 11s? It's way up there, you know. It's way better than, you know, hearing CNN or something like that. If one hears the characteristics of Prithu Maharaj and is a brahmana, he becomes perfectly qualified with brahminical powers. If he is a kshatriya, he becomes a king of the world. If he is a Vaishya, he becomes a master of other Vaishyas and many animals. And if he's a Shudra, he becomes the topmost devotee. It does not matter whether one is a man or woman. Anyone who with great respect hears this narration of Maharishi Prithu will become the father of many children if he is without children, and will become the richest man of men if he is without money. And it goes on and on from here. And throughout the Bhagavatam you'll find these. These are real benedictions that are coming from exalted personalities. So derive your wealth from the Bhagavatam. And it's inconceivable how just by lending your ears to hearing the Bhagavatam that you'll receive all these things. Not only become learned, you'll also be able to deal with various stressful situations, because the Bhagavatam deals with all the various changes of the mind and tells how one deals with the various psychological challenges that we'll meet in this world. So, we heard about being patient. That also is in this verse that we'll go on hearing, we'll go on practicing our devotional service, but this is one of the main instructions that we're given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, is to be patient. What would you say if I asked you what the quintessential verse that of the Srimad Bhagavatam that advises us to be... Okay, go ahead, Priya Kishore. That advises us to be patient. Give the Sanskrit, the English, and a little commentary.
Tate nikampam susumikshamano bunjana evatma kitam vipakam hedva agvapurbir vidadam namaste jivetayo mukti pade sadayavak.
That was worth the price of admission and whatever trouble it took to get here tonight just to hear that. Tell us more about the verse.
So this is found in the prayers of Lord Brahma to Krishna, and he says that that one should be patient, and he should that through all the sufferings that come upon him, understanding that I deserve more than what I'm receiving now. And on the point of patience, you were mentioning in a previous class that you know, about your incident in Chicago, mm-hmm. and you said that we don't know how many times we blew it in this world, and we can't even remember 50 years back. How are we to remember millions of lifetimes? So when we're patient, we take shelter of the Lord, knowing that not only does He know our record, mm-hmm. but He has the power to destroy it as well.
That was good. Well done. Bravo. Yeah. I liked how you said that we take shelter of the Lord, trusting Him. This patience really means trusting the Lord, that in due course of time, He'll work things out in my favor, especially if I'm taking shelter of Him, that He knows exactly how to make things work. I don't have to make so many plans myself. I have to somehow or other stay in the game. Just stay on the field, or at least even on the bench. If you put in on the team and you know they won't let you play, at least stay on the bench and don't get kicked off the team somehow. Because if the team wins the championship, you'll get a ring also. Even if you're sitting on the bench, that's a fact. So, you know, this verse advocates that somehow or other we stay in the game. You know, you don't have to be a great devotee. You just have to stay alive somehow or other. Be patient and stay alive. And the way to stay alive is to be patient. And it's so profound. This verse says, Sadayabak, which means that you're an inheritor. It means that if you're patient in taking shelter of the Lord throughout this lifetime, no matter what comes to you, if you're just patient, you don't do anything else, but you're just patiently go on with your practice of devotional service, however meager it may be, you will inherit the kingdom of God. Sadayabak means an inheritor. So this is a very important verse on patience. What are one of the other five points that we made the other day on Sunday? Okay, 1, 2.
So we talked, or you were telling about how we should carefully ask what we need, carefully be very careful about what we ask for. We should not ask for things that we cannot handle.
That's true, yeah. Be aware of what you're after. Can you peacefully enjoy it, what you're asking for? And I quoted from the modern songs that, watch out, you might get what you're after. And you might actually, that desire can be fulfilled, and we've proved it again and again through the Sri Upanishad that Krishna's there fulfilling all desires, right?
Yeah, yeah. We saw an example about how Hiranyakashipu went on asking for benedictions from Brahma, which he wanted to become the master of the universe, and he started asking. He knew that his brother was killed by Varaha, so he was asking for how he cannot be killed by an animal, neither an animal nor a human, neither in the day nor in the night. And he kept asking because he was so greedy to own the universe, but in the end he had a very horrible
it crushed him.
Yeah,
he couldn't handle it. It's not meant for a living entity to be a big controller. We're servants. Selfless service is the answer, not trying to be the big controller. Thank you. Thanks for remembering that. Shraddha?
Actually, she covered one of them, which is to not to make material plans, but to make spiritual plans.
Okay, don't make material plans. So that's number three. So be patient. Don't ask for benedictions you can't handle. And
pray and pray hard.
And okay, that's number four. So number three was to don't make material plans, make spiritual plans. And number four was pray. And how hard should you pray?
Very hard.
Very hard. Pray hard. And number five. It doesn't count unless you have a microphone. Okay.
So you have to cover number five because that was the last, to be patient. But you also emphasized that we should follow the Shastras. So take help from the Shastras.
Yeah, how hard can that be? I mean, first of all, you got to find out what they say. That helps. A lot of times people say, you know, do you know Bhagavad Gita? I know Bhagavad Gita. It says, do your work. Like, that's it? That's all you got out of Bhagavad Gita? No, there's 700 verses. If you can learn C++, you can learn 700 verses of the Gita. So, you know, learn what they are. Find out what Krishna likes, what he says to do and not do. And so, for instance, he says, do yajna. He says, this is an important instruction. He says, the universe is made for yajna. Because everyone's wondering, what's this world for? This comes up also in the 8th canto. I read it. I thought it was in the Gajendra section, but it's just beyond that. And I couldn't find it when I was looking for it, because I had it misplaced. And I just read it again yesterday. It's very instructive part of the Bhagavatam, and there is saying that the sages, well, an ordinary person has no idea what the world's for. Now, people speculate all the time what it's for, and some people say you're meant to enjoy the world, don't they? Who says that? Marlboro, Coca-Cola, RCA, Disney, I mean, you know, enjoy the world. And then who says, or do other people say, give it up? Give up the world. Yogis, but many people, you know, Nivritti Marg, they say don't engage, somehow or other pull back, renounce, and things like that. So that's also a common philosophy. And so, you know, this personality is saying in the Bhagavatam, like, what should I do? Enjoy the world, stay in the material world, or should I leave the material world behind? And says, okay, what do these sages say? And what does the Shastra say? Shastra says it's not your home. Therefore, I'll just follow that. I won't make this my home. Interestingly, side note, when we were just reading recently in Govardhan, there's a section in the Bhagavatam when the sons of the Prachetas are going off for training. At first, there's 10,000 sons of, not of the sons of the Prachetas, but Daksha. Yeah, Prajapati Daksha has 10,000 sons. He sends them off to do yajna austerity to prepare themselves to take grihastha ashram. And Narada Muni comes along, he finds them all, you know, doing all these austerities and saying, you know, don't waste this. He said, you should become renunciates, you know, leave everything and become sannyasis. Of course they do, because they're really intelligent. And in teaching them, he gives an analogy, and in the very complex analogy, he says, there's a hole that people enter into and they never come back. That was one of the parts of the analogy. The analogy was very abstract, but they were very intelligent, were the sons of Daksha, and they figured it all out, what he meant, just by hearing it one time. And then they was like, okay, we're out of here. And when he told about the hole, he said, later on, it's given more explanation that entering the material world is like entering a hole. And he said, once you enter the hole, you don't come out. So coming into the material world is a little dangerous, because once you enter in here, really, you don't come out again, unless there's some major intervention that somebody comes and pulls you out of this hole in the material world. So you have to think very carefully before you enter in any holes. If you see a hole somewhere, like, just don't jump in. Because, you know, once you get in there, it's like, how do I get out? It's like, I don't know, it's up to you now. It's really difficult. So the material world is just like that. On the other hand, they understood, and it was explained later in the chapter, that leaving the material world is like entering a hole, and you go back into Vaikuntha, and then you never come back from there. And so we have to, from moment to moment, think what kind of a hole we're getting ourselves into. Be careful, because if you enter into certain contracts with the material world, it may be difficult to get out of them again. Just consider that. Okay, so those are the 5 points. And for today, we've moved up to the section in the Bhagavatam where we're hearing about the qualities, as I promised you, of Prahlad Maharaj. And this is 7.4.31 through 32. The qualities of Maharaj Prahlad, the son of Hiranyakashipu, are described herewith. He was completely cultured as a qualified brahmana, having very good character and being determined to understand the absolute truth. He had full control of his senses and mind. Like the supersoul, he was kind to every living entity and was the best friend of everyone. To respectable persons, he acted exactly like a menial servant. To the poor, he was like a father. To his equals, he was attached like a sympathetic brother. And he considered his teachers, spiritual masters, and older godbrothers to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was completely free from unnatural pride that might have arisen from his good education, riches, beauty, aristocracy, and so on. How did you feel when you heard those? So let's read them again, and you'll see that when you hear these qualities of Prahlad Maharaj, it causes the mind to aspire for these things. Like, oh, I didn't know these things were possible, because the lower modes of nature are so oppressive, they block our ability to taste these qualities. But this is the real nectar of life, is to refine oneself and develop these qualities, because, as the beginning of the seventh canto points out, that's what attracts Krishna. The only reason that we don't perceive Krishna at every moment is due to our lack of qualities. Well, my lack of qualities, you're in a different category. But due to my lack of qualities, I'm not able to perceive Krishna. And therefore, in the argument that was given by Shukadeva Goswami earlier in the canto, he says, of course, Krishna is equal to everyone. But some perceive him, others don't. Some are able to take advantage of his benedictions, others aren't, and it's because of their own qualities. And if we understand what good qualities are and how to develop them, then this is the key to life. This is what makes human life exciting, is to be in pursuit of refining oneself and developing these qualities. And as one does, one is able to perceive the presence of Krishna. Satvam yad brahma darshanam. Even touching the mode of goodness, the Bhagavatam says, Partiva dharano dumas tasmaragnis trayimayaha tamasastu rajas tasmat satvam yad brahma darshanam. That he compares the mode of ignorance to be like raw wood. The mode of passion is like smoke. Smoke disturbs but never serves. And then you've got goodness, which is like fire. And fire, you can actually offer ghee and mantras, Vedic sacrifice. And you can attain the benefit of human life. And from fire, from goodness, satvam yad brahma darshanam, you can actually see for yourself that Krishna is there with us all the time. You're walking on the body of God right now. You're sitting on him. How does that make you feel? Like an ant. Yeah, so this is the nectar of life, is actually develop these qualities, to know what they are, and to know that there are pure devotees who imbibe these qualities. By worshipping them, and following their footsteps, we'll also attain the same result. And no matter where we're starting now, no matter what kind of combination of lower qualities we may have taken in here and there by drinking different substances here in the material world, passion, ignorance, so forth, those will be purified by following the footsteps of the great souls. Who can verify that with a verse from the first canto, second chapter of the Bhagavatam? Was that you? Again? Okay. If you don't do it, then Mukharvin's going to do it, so. Anyone? 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 If Malini was here, she'd know, because she always smiles every time I quote this verse. That's right. But kind of belt it out.
Previously, the great sages have worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Bhagavatam Adhokya. And whoever follows that, they also get the same destination.
How does it feel carrying around such knowledge on the tip of your tongue? Does it make you happy?
Yes.
It does, yeah. Okay, good. You should be happy. Okay, here's the purport to this wonderfully enlivening verse. These are some of the qualifications of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is automatically a Brahmana because a Vaishnava has all the good qualities of a Brahmana. Shamo damas tapa shaucham shantir arja vanevacha gyanam vigyanam astikyam brahma karma subhavajam. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, honesty, wisdom, knowledge, and religiousness. These are the qualities by which the Brahmanas work. These qualities are manifest in the body of a Vaishnava. Therefore, a perfect Vaishnava is also a perfect Brahmana, as indicated here by the words Brahmanya Shila Sampanna. A Vaishnava is always determined to understand the Absolute Truth, and to understand the Absolute Truth, one needs to have full control over his senses and mind. Prahlad Maharaj possessed all these qualities. A Vaishnava is always a well-wisher to everyone. The six Goswamis, for example, are described in this way, Dira Dira Janapriya. They were popular with both the gentle and the ruffians. Shraddha, what's a ruffian? A Vaishnav must be equal to everyone, regardless of one's position. Atmavat. A Vaishnav should be like Paramatma. How do you like that? A Vaishnav should be like Paramatma. You like it? Indeed, he is in the heart. But by Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hride Sharajana Tishtiti, Paramatma does not hate anyone. Okay, pundits who specialize in the Ishvapanishad, give me a verse. Give me two verses from Ishvapanishad that proves that. Hey, wait a minute. No. That's not the one. Come on. Tell us. Chop, chop, chop.
Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaiva bodhvijanutaha tatra ko mahuka shuka ekatha manipashyataha.
Translation. Call a friend. Okay, let's work it out. Say the verse again, word for word, and you'll figure it out. It's in the Sanskrit.
Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaiva bodhvijanutaha tatra ko moha ka shoka.
What's moha and shoka? What does moha mean, anybody?
Attachment.
illusion, moha. How about shoka?
Anxiety.
Yeah, like lamentation. Okay, moha shoka. And it's saying that that you won't have moha shoka if what? Yasmin sarvani bhutani. Bhutani means all living entities. Yasmin sarvani bhutani. Yes, go ahead.
If you see all living entities with equally, then
free from lamentation.
Yeah, how should you see them?
Equally, as spiritual sparks.
Quality one.
Yeah. So say the verse again. Yasmin. Yasmin.
Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmeva bodhvijanatah tatva kurmaha kashoka ekatva manupashyatah.
Okay, you can look it up. Tell us the translation. Tell us the word for word also.
One who sees all living entities as spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him?
Now look at the, that's number seven. Okay, there it is. Do the word for word, we'll repeat after you.
Yasmin.
Yasmin.
In the situation.
In the situation.
Sarvani.
Sarvani.
All.
All.
Bhutani.
Bhutani.
Living entities.
Living entities.
Atma.
Atma.
The chitkana or spiritual spark.
The chitkana or spiritual spark.
Eva.
Eva.
Only.
Only.
Abhut.
Abhut.
Exist as.
Exist as.
Vijanataha.
Vijanataha.
Of one who knows.
Of one who knows.
Tatra.
Tatra.
Therein.
Therein.
Ka.
Ka.
What?
What?
Moha.
Moha.
Illusion.
Illusion.
Ka.
Ka.
What?
What?
Shokaha.
Shokaha.
Anxiety.
Anxiety.
Ekatvam.
Ekatvam.
Oneness and quality.
Oneness and quality.
Anupashyataha.
Anupashyataha.
Of one who sees through authority or one who sees constantly like that.
Of one who sees through authority or one who sees constantly like that. That's a good citation. Very good to have. So this verse approves this idea of the devotee seeing like the Paramatma. And what's the other verse that goes with this one? You guys, you say. Take the mic. I'll give you a hint. Give him the mic. It's right next to this one. What number is this verse?
Seven.
So is it six or is it eight?
Six.
Six? Is that a statement or a question?
Six.
So.
Yes tu sarvani bhutani atmani evanupashita.
Move it to six, please. Same shastra. Okay, do it again.
Yes tu sarvani bhutani.
Yes tu sarvani bhutani.
Atmani evanupashita.
Atmani evanupashiti.
Sarvabhuteshu chatmanam. Tato na vijugupshate.
Word for word.
Ya.
He who.
Tu.
But.
Sarvani.
Sarvani.
All.
Bhutani.
Living entities. Atmani. In relation to the Supreme Lord.
Eva.
Only.
Anupashyati.
Observes in a systematic way.
Sarvabhuteshu.
In every living being.
Cha.
And.
Atmanam.
The super soul. Tataha.
Thereafter.
Na.
Not.
Vijugupsate.
Hates anyone. Translation.
He who sees systematically everything in relation to the Supreme Lord and who sees all living entities as his part and parcels and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything never hates anything or any being.
So don't these two verses relate well to what we just heard? Three people?
Yes.
Yeah, it definitely does. Listen, here's the section again. Listen carefully. They were popular with both gender and the ruffians. A Vaishnava must be equal to everyone regardless of one's position. Atmavat, a Vaishnava should be like Paramatma. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hridaya Shraddha Jindatishtati. Paramatma does not hate anyone. Indeed, he is in the heart of a Brahmana, but he is also in the heart of a pig. So, a key word in both of these verses, Anupashyati. So Pashyati means to see, and Anu means to follow. So it means to systematically see. In other words, by following what the Shastra says, that's how you should see. The Shastra Chakshus, that's how you should see the living entities. Even if you haven't realized it fully, you should still follow the Shastra and understand that living entities are spiritual beings beyond the gross and subtle material bodies. So this is one of the qualities that Prahlad Maharaj has, that he's like Paramatma because he's seeing everybody equally. He's seeing the spiritual aspect of each person. Okay, continuing in the purport for 7.4.32. He is in the heart of a Brahmana, but he is also even in the heart of a pig. Anybody here ever seen a pig?
Yes.
Yeah? Where'd you see a pig? In Vrindavan. If you've been in Vrindavan, you've definitely seen a pig. Yeah, and is Krishna there within the heart of the pig?
Yes.
Did you realize it? Did you see him there? Did you offer obeisances? Can we offer obeisances to a pig?
Yes.
Absolutely. We can offer obeisances to a pig or a dog or any other living entity because Krishna is there within the heart. So this is a real vision. This is what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita is the sign of a learned person. Where does he say that in the Bhagavad Gita? Anyone? Anyone? Yes, Kautikarnika, the source of all entertainment. Servant.
Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmani Gavihastini Shunichaivashu Pakecha Pandita Samdarshina.
Translation is?
A learned person, a humble sage who is learned also sees a learned Brahmana, cow, an elephant, and a dog, and a dog eater with an equal vision because he sees them on a spiritual level.
She's on the spiritual platform. Yes, very good. Okay, so that person's a pundit. As the moon never refuses to distribute its pleasing rays even to the home of a chandala, a Vaishnava never refuses to act for everyone's welfare. How does that make you feel? Happy, right? Therefore, what is it? Dhira dhira janapriya. Therefore, a Vaishnava is always obedient to the spiritual master, Arya. The word Arya refers to one who is advanced in knowledge. One who is deficient in knowledge cannot be called Arya. At the present, however, the word Arya is used to refer to those who are godless. This is the unfortunate situation of Kali Yuga. The word guru refers to the spiritual master who initiates his disciple into advancement in the science of Krishna, or Krishna consciousness as stated by Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Shri Bhagavan Mantra Padeshaka Gurav Ityartaha. So let's hear if you have any points or realizations from the sections we just read and discussed, either Ishapanishad or from the purport. Yes. Questions are also allowed.
So in the beginning of this purport, Prabhupada says, these are some of the qualifications of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is automatically a Brahmana because Vaishnava has all the good qualities of a Brahmana. And this reminded me of the verse, Vipad Vishad Guna Yutada Ravindana Vapada Ravinda Vimukad Shapachan Varishtam Manu Tadar Pita Manu Vachanuhi Tata Pranam Punati Sakulam Matuburimana. Where he says that a Brahmana who has all the 24 qualities that are mentioned in the Sanat Sujata,
he cannot liberate anybody, whereas a dog eater who is following the process of devotional service can not only liberate himself but his entire family.
Very well done. I just have one slight adjustment. It says if a brahmana has all these 24 qualities but doesn't have faith in the Supreme Lord. Yeah. That's the only thing. Yeah.
So I was also connecting with how Srila Prabhupada says that the moon distributes its rays equally even on the $10. So being a brahmana bandhu, being a brahmana does not qualify us in any way. But a dog eater is not a disqualification at the same time. Being from a lower birth, if we strictly follow the principles that are mentioned in the Shastra.
Yes, this is a very important verse given by Prahlad Maharaj in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavatam, in which, and is a verse that's frequently quoted by Prabhupada and various acharyas to show that if one becomes a Vaishnava, then naturally he has all the, or she has all the qualities of the brahmana. So if one's a Vaishnava, then one's automatically a brahmana. Now, in part of our history of our lineage, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur reintroduced a process, or not reintroduced, but introduced a process that when devotees would take initiation, diksha, into the Arsampradaya, that he would give them a Brahman's thread. And this, and the Gayatri Mantra. This was because at the time, actually previous to this, when someone would become a Vaishnav, they would renounce the Varnashrama. They would put on white, like the Goswamis. And they wouldn't identify with any of the Varnas or Ashrams, because they would say, and which is true from the Shastra, that the Vaishnav is beyond the Varnas and Ashrams. However, because the line of Vaishnavs coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had become deviated so much and degraded, people didn't consider the Vaishnavs very well, the Gaudiya Vaishnavs especially. And to emphasize that when one actually became initiated by a bona fide spiritual master in the Vaishnav line and took and assumed the qualities of a Vaishnav, that one also became a Brahmin, that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta did something which was like the reverse of what was happening. He would actually give the Brahmin's thread and say, which meant something. It doesn't mean anything, in, you know, if you go to Oracle or into people to say, what's that string, or what are you chanting, you know, three times a day. But in India, especially at that time, it meant a lot because, you know, people see the Brahmin's thread and think, oh, you came from a Brahmin family. So he had instituted this process of giving the Brahmin's thread to those, even if they weren't from Brahmin families, who became Vaishnavas, initiated Vaishnavas, to show the import of the verse that Pri Kishori just brought to our attention, which is that when you develop the qualities of a Vaishnav, when you become a Vaishnav, then naturally you have the qualities of a Brahmana. Any other points? Yes.
But how in your previous lectures, you once you mentioned that equality doesn't mean, we see the equality in quality,
yes.
But even though Paramatma is within everyone's hearts, our dealings with everyone is not the same. And the purport highlights that when it says how Prahlad Maharaj, even though he did see equality, but his dealings and reciprocations with different people were different.
This is a very important point. Now, we notice that if we look carefully, that we live in a bi-dimensional universe. There's a spiritual aspect and there's a material aspect to this world. Which would you say is more appreciated or honored in this world? Our spiritual aspect or our material aspect? Institutionally, which is more honored? I would disagree with you that most of you said material aspect. And I'll tell you why. For instance, in the United States of America, we follow various documents. One's called the Magna Carta, and based on the Magna Carta, we have the Constitution of the United States, Declaration of Independence. And in these documents, it is stated, written by Thomas Jefferson, a great statesman early on in the United States during the American Revolution, that we hold it as self-evident that all men are created equal. So how is it that people are equal? would you say? Materially speaking, are they equal? Is anybody in this room equal to another? Everybody, if you test on any level, Hridaya Nanda Maharaj brings this point out very frequently and very effectively. If you test anybody on any material level, you'll find that there's variety everywhere. Everyone has some difference. Some people can learn faster. Some people can play music better than others. Some people are better at mathematics than others. Some people have higher emotional intelligence than others, and so forth. So on a material level, we're not equal. So how is it self-evident, then, that we're all created equal? Now, institutionally, this is what the whole country is based on, this idea that we're all created equal, and that it's self-evident that we are. So if it's not on a material level, then it has to be on a metaphysical level. Metta means above. So it's above the physical level. It's on the metaphysical level. And you could see how this is actually true everywhere, even in human societies that don't have a stated document. People naturally value things like justice, which is not material. Because if it was material, you'd be able to empirically study it, but you can't. What is justice? It's something that is not quantifiable, but is something that we hold as self-evident. For instance, everybody in this room would agree that it is wrong to kill an innocent child. Yes? Thank you. Why? Does it have to be stated somewhere? No, we intuitively know. It's self-evident that these things are wrong. We understand, we intuit, because there's a spiritual aspect to it, which is more prominent everywhere than here. Of course, artificially it can be suppressed for some time, but that's the most prominent of our understandings of the world, that these qualities are more important. Justice, compassion, and so forth, which you can't see empirically, which you can't measure on that level, material level. Now, how do we deal with that? Because we also have to, as we're seeing people equally, and Prabhupada brings this up in the verses that you just quoted, he said we shouldn't artificially try to apply this and say that we're Uttama Adhikaris, and then treat everybody in the same way, even though we don't see them that way. So on one side, which is our Vyavaharika existence, the way that we deal with the world, we have to be very practical. And for instance, you may see a tiger as the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead along with an individual soul. But it doesn't mean that you'll invite it to come live in your house or that you'll go pet the tiger, right? However, on the paramartika level, we understand and see that there's a spirit soul within the body and so forth. Other points? Yes. 1, 2.
So Maharaj, there was a mention there that a Vaishnava must be equal to everyone. And you had mentioned the story of when we were talking about Narad Muni, Bajayavina, when we talked about that. So you had mentioned that the 10,000 sons of the Prachetas, they went to do those penances. So I was reading the other day that when they perform the penances and they see the Lord, then they start praying to Him and they say that, that O Lord, you don't have any enemies, and because you don't have any enemies, you see everybody equally.
Mm.
So I was just thinking that the Vaishnava, doesn't have enemies like that.
Vaishnava doesn't have any enemies. And this is one of the qualities that we see in Prahlad Maharaj, that his father was trying to teach him that there are good people, bad people, and then you should be against some and for others. But Prahlad received a different teaching from Narada. Other things?
This Bali Mardan Prabhu.
Yes.
So that's from Bali Mardan Prabhu.
Bali Mardan.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So he says, the ability to overcome unsteadiness is called firmness or steadfastness, dhriti. And when one is fully qualified, yet is humble and gentle, and when one is able to keep his balance both in sorrow and in the ecstasy of joy, he has the opulence called patience or shama. That is Bhagavad Gita 10:34.
Can you read it again?
Yeah, sure. The ability to overcome unsteadiness is called firmness or steadfastness, that is dhriti.
What is the definition of dhriti?
Steadfastness.
Say more about it. Read it one more time.
The ability to overcome unsteadiness is called firmness or steadfastness.
The ability to overcome unsteadiness. That's a good thing to know, isn't it?
Yes.
Have you ever felt unsteady?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's possible because we're mixing it up with the material world. We're working in a complex situation here. And we have various responsibilities. Do we not?
Yes.
Yeah, we do. We have a lot of different responsibilities to our body. Where are some responsibilities that you have practically?
Practical? Cooking, cleaning?
Cooking. That's a good one. Yeah. And job, family, you know, there's so many financial responsibilities, health responsibilities, and these things require a lot of maintenance. And it's a constant endeavor to stay balanced. And so to develop the ability, say it again, what Bali Mardani said?
The ability to overcome unsteadiness.
What's the ability to overcome unsteadiness?
Dhriti?
Yes, the ability to overcome unsteadiness.
And when one is fully qualified, yet is humble and gentle.
If you're fully qualified, but humble and gentle.
And when one is able to keep his balance, both in sorrow and in the ecstasy of joy.
Oh, keep your balance in sorrow and the ecstasy of joy.
He has the opulence called patience.
Then you have the opulence called patience, Shama.
Svambha.
Mike.
Krishna calls Arjuna Dhridavrata.
Dhridavrata.
It sounds like dhriti.
Yes.
And the word dhira, they all sound and hold a similar meaning.
Are they connected?
Dhriti and dhrita come from like the same.
What is the root?
To uphold and be strong.
And what is the root word?
Dhrit.
Dhrit?
Dhrit.
Dhrit, right.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Nice observation. Okay, yes? Are we following the microphone protocol? Go ahead.
So I was just thinking, Prabhu, how much these qualities are important also to serve the spiritual master. Because if we don't have the understanding of these qualities and practice it ourselves, it's very possible that I misunderstand my spiritual master's activities. Because sometimes I have some quarrel with some devotees, but then when my spiritual master talks to both of us, both of them have the same love for the spiritual master. So when the spiritual master's behavior, if I want to understand why he is acting in the way he is behaving, I will misunderstand him and commit an offense to my spiritual master, and which is the key in our spiritual life. Because then we may externally only accept a spiritual master, but within our heart, when we are alone, we may not be able to relish the qualities of a spiritual master, but rather when I am alone, I would think that he is partial, or he is like this, or he is like that. So mentally I will be committing so many offenses without knowing that the spiritual master is practicing this, and he is trying to shower his mercy on everybody equally. So I was just thinking how much this is important. So I can be happy at all levels and truly serve the guru, the spiritual master.
Yes, so one of the ways in which it is similar to the point I made earlier, to be able to take advantage of Krishna's mercy, we have to refine ourselves. To take advantage of Krishna's representative, his agent, then we also have to refine ourselves and be able to appreciate the qualities. Thank you, good point. Okay, Internet?
So this is Alex Zarinov. Hare Krishna, dear Maharaj, please accept our obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and all the devotees. We are very much inspired by that point, how you connected the beginning of the seventh canto, where it is said about the lack of good qualities, which we can find in such a great example like Prahlad Maharaj, and by doing so, we can attract the merciful glance of the Lord.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that point back. That is that we're talking about Prahlad Maharaj, and we're remembering his qualities. And if we serve Prahlad Maharaj, then we'll also take on those same qualities through service to Prahlad Maharaj. One of the ways we've talked about this here at ISV over the years, that Prahlad Maharaj had a mission, and he expresses it in the ninth chapter of the seventh canto, in which he talks about how he laments for the way that people are caught up with the material world and feels that they're being crushed by the wheel of time. He also says that they've taken on this huge burden of ugra karma. They're working very hard for no real reward at all. So he says, I don't want to live in the mountains. I don't want to go to the Himalayas and just meditate and say mantras to myself. But what does he want to do instead? You were going to say?
Yeah,
give him the mic. What does he say instead to do?
I think he wanted to liberate all beings before he...
Where do they live, these living beings?
In India or on the earth?
They live in Silicon Valley. Oh. I mean, he says, I don't want to live in the... He's making this contrast. He says, I want to move out to the remote places where many yogis go to be by themselves in a cave. He said, I want to move to the big cities and towns and be able to be with the people so that I can give them the benefit. That's the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. So you can see very easily how us staying in Silicon Valley or whatever big city you're in now, Prabhu in the back, get him a mic, is following the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. The trouble that you take to make sure that Russian books go out to all the devotees all over North America, is it any trouble? I know it for a fact. It's a lot of trouble. I just talked to Savas last night. They were shipped here in the wrong way. They got all messed up. And then you got to figure out the new prices. I mean, there's unlimited things that you have to deal with, almost like a CEO has to deal with all kinds of problems all the time. Some guy I was just reading about the other day, 62-year-old CEO, he's on his phone all day long dealing with problems. So Prahlad's saying, I'm going to live like that. Dealing with all these problems, being in the cities and towns, just to be close to the people, to be able to give them Krishna consciousness. So, following the same principle that Mukhadavind so kindly brought up to us about Bejare Muniyotagre Bhagavan Tamadhuksajam Sattvam Bishuram Shemaya Kalpanteyi Nataniha. This verse that he quoted said, previously all the great sages worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhood because they could attain the highest benefit, because he's beyond the three modes of material nature. Anyone who follows in the footsteps of those sages, does the same kind of worship, is eligible for the same result. So this point comes out, if we serve Prahlad Maharaj by serving his representative in the line of disciplic succession in the same mood, then we'll attain these qualities. We'll get them by the mercy of those personalities. Prabhu.
Yeah, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So I wanted to share something which my wife Kamala shared with me. She showed me a video yesterday of Prabhupada giving a talk and talking about qualities. He's saying that one test, he's saying you had to take only one test to realize if you are in the material world or in the spiritual world. He's saying if you are jealous, then you are in the material world. If you are not jealous, then you are in the spiritual world. He's saying, I don't know from, I don't think he quoted anything, but he talked about this. He said that that is one important test to realize whether you're spiritual or still in the material world.
That's such an excellent point and a good test. And he does quote from Bhagavatam there. He quotes, Tada rajas tamo bhava kamalo badayascheye chete tera navidam stitam sattve prasidati. Said at the time when you become freed from the lower modes of material nature, rajas and tamas, you'll notice that pinching isn't there. And that then you become free from this propensity to be jealous of others. If it's not in that section, he quotes it in other sections and related to the same principle. But it's a very, very important point. It comes up also in the seventh canto, and near the end. What is the verse number? 7:15:8. If you'll show us this verse. Translation. Persons who want to advance in superior religion are advised to give up all envy of other living entities. Whether in relationship to the body, words, or mind, there is no religion superior to this. So this is the the best of all religious processes to give up envy of all living entities. Nirmatsaranam satam. Yes.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to tell one more point. I think in the ninth...
No, don't be sorry. When you want to... you're eager to speak Krishna Katha, it's a boon to the whole world.
So in the ninth canto, the chapters where Lord Ram's pastimes are mentioned, it says one of the lines that whoever reads this, the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra will be free from envy. So
will be free from envy. There you have it. And so, you know, you might ask, how do I attain that position? Hear Bhagavatam. Really, take time to read Bhagavatam, know Bhagavatam, enter within the Bhagavatam, and your life will become sublime without question. Thank you everyone who joined us here this evening for discussion about Prahlad Maharaj and his qualities. And to everyone who joined us online, we felt your presence very deeply. We're very happy you tuned in. And please turn towards the camera and say Hare Krishna to all our friends. But a little bit louder. Yeah, it's nice to have this opportunity to be connected throughout the world and speak Krishna Katha. And now we have the opportunity to dance. I'm yet to write the book, but the title of it is Never Miss a Chance to Dance. And it is a very intrinsic part of bhakti to dance. So learn to dance for the deity and let yourself go a little bit. And we're going to clear the dance floor now and move all the seats and carpets out of the way, and then you can feel free to dance to the beautiful Artik song written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Thank you very much for coming. Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande Haribol.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman. Hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.